Hello, this is Judy, and for the next hour, I will be reading selected articles from the Toronto Star edition of September 17th, 2025, on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. And the first article I will read, and it's a developing story, is the MPs debate Canada's federal budget as Green leader Elizabeth May says she will support Mark Carney's fiscal plan. The minority Liberals need the support of at least a few MPs outside of their party to get the votes needed to pass the budget. And there's a picture, and it shows a couple of people, including Green Party leader Elizabeth May, rises during question period on the Parliament Hill in Ottawa, Monday, November 17th, 2025. Members of the Parliament will vote on Prime Minister Mark Carney's first budget later today and what will be a confidence vote for the Liberal government. Follow the Star's live coverage today, so we'll be reading some of it. So it's what to know. The vote is likely to take place around 6:45 p.m. The Liberals need at least two votes from opposition MPs to pass Mark Carney's first budget. If some MPs abstain from voting, the budget could also pass. Premier Doug Ford said he hopes the budget passes today after a First Minister's huddle with PM Carney. And then there's a picture of, and it's various people, and the caption reads, "Question period in the House of Commons before the third and final vote on Prime Minister Mark Carney's first budget." And this article, as I'm reading, was updated 4 minutes ago. Budget will be, quotes, narrowly passed, ready for an election if it comes to that, Liberal MP Corey Hogan. And that part, this section is written by Mark Ramsey, Ramzy, of the Ottawa Bureau. And there's a picture of newly elected Liberal Member of Parliament Corey Hogan speaks about his win in the Calgary Confederation riding during an interview on Tuesday, April 29, 2025. And this picture is by Jeff McIntosh, McIntosh, of the Canadian Press. As May shared her support for the budget, Liberal MP Corey Hogan told reporters he expects it will be, quotes, narrowly passed through some absentations. But he said he's ready to go through another election if he has to. And quotes, hopefully for the sake of all Canadians who don't want a Christmas election will be able to move on and start delivering on this budget, Hogan said. This part is updated 2 minutes ago. Elizabeth May will support the budget to, in quote, stop an election from happening. And this part is by Tonda McCharles, Ottawa Bureau Chief, and Alex Ballingale, Deputy Ottawa Bureau Chief. The Greens own MP Elizabeth May is now scrumming with reporters and saying she will support the budget too, as she heard from constituents, in quote, stop an election from happening. She said she heard a firm commitment to meeting the Paris targets today from PM Mark Carney that she hadn't heard since he was a central banker. May says if Carney had not stood in the House today and said that, she would have voted no, but now she'll support the budget. She warns the Liberals won't be able to count on her supporting them in the future confidence measures unless they show action on climate change. In quotes, the Prime Minister heard my pleas and committed to meeting our legally binding commitments under the Paris Agreement, committing to reconciliation, committing to action for adaptation to protect us from extreme events we can no longer avoid, and for the process of reconciliation with the Indigenous peoples of this country. With May's support, the Liberals still need one more vote to survive. Failing that, they'll need at least two other opposition MPs to abstain, on top of May's vote in support. And I'll read one more part of this. Updated 60 minutes ago, Liberal MPs have fingers crossed as budget awaits crucial House vote. And this section is written by David Baxter and Kyle Dugan of the Canadian Press. And it shows pictures of various people, including, and the caption reads, Finance and National Revenue Minister François-Philippe Champagne, rises during the question period on Parliament Hill in Ottawa, Monday, November 17, 2025. And this picture was taken by Adrian Wild, WILD, of the Canadian Press. Finance Minister François-Philippe Champagne said the budget's fate is a question for the opposition, not the Liberals. In quotes, "We deliver for the Canadians, and I hope they can feel the mood of the nation. Canadians want to go forward," Champagne told reporters on his way into Parliament on Monday. Liberal MP Wayne Long said the governing party has its, quotes, "fingers crossed." MP James Mahoney, who chairs the Liberal caucus, said he can't see the budget failing because Canadians don't want another election so soon after the last. This article is titled, "The Federal Budget Could Be a Boon to the Economy, but Benefits Might Take Years to Be Felt," economists say. Mark Carney's government announced a $78.3 billion deficit for the 2025-2026 years, a number that surpassed earlier projections made by the Independent Parliamentary Budget Officer. And this article was dated November 5th. And there's some pictures of construction and people talking, and the caption reads, "There are some interesting new programs to be sure," said David McDonald, a senior economist at the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives, citing the Build Canada Homes initiative, a new federal agency aimed at building affordable housing and incentivizing construction. Nick LaChance of the Toronto Star, it's a Nick LaChance Toronto Star file photo. And this article was written by Anna, A-N-A, Pereira, P-E-R-E-I-R-A, a business reporter. Tuesday's federal budget will jumpstart Canadian economic growth, but many of its benefits could take several years to materialize, according to several economists surveyed by the Star. Mark Carney's government announced a $78.3 billion deficit for the years 2025 to 26, a number that surpassed earlier projections made by the Independent Parliamentary Budget Officer. The deficit is the highest in three decades outside of recessions. At the same time, the government pledged $141.4 billion in new spending, mainly on infrastructure and national defense, over the next 5 years. The Fed said the expenditures are needed to make the Canadian economy more self-sufficient in light of American tariffs and global economic uncertainty. But the budget provided little new relief for Canada's tariff-hit sectors, while the broader economy is showing signs of a struggle, such as high unemployment and stagnant growth. Economists say that most of the investments proposed in the budget will largely be felt in the long run. In quotes, "I think this really is planning for the next year, the next 3 years, the next 10 years. It's protecting ourselves that the U.S. market is not coming back the way it was," said BMO chief economist Douglas Porter. In quotes, "We all have to plan for the possibility that this is not just some short-term blip and things really have changed." Porter's overall take on the budget was positive. In quotes, "Some of this new spending that we're seeing is actually setting up the possibility for future growth, for better growth in the future. So I think, on balance, it's a reasonable plan and should support the economy through the medium term," he said. Is it transformational? We wouldn't say it's transformational. David McDonald, senior economist at the Canadian Center for Policy Alternatives, agrees. "There are some interesting new programs, to be sure." McDonald cited the Build Canada Homes initiative, a new federal agency aimed at building affordable housing and incentivizing construction. The agency was awarded an initial $13 billion to spend on residential developments. In quotes, "But I don't know that it's a radical departure from how governments attempted to manage the economy yesterday." Out of the $141.4 billion in the new spending, $59 billion would go towards defense, another $27.3 billion will pay for the government's previously announced decision to cut the lowest income tax bracket from 15 to 14%. The budget also aims to boost business investment by allowing companies to write off the cost of new equipment or machinery in 1 year, bringing the, in quotes, effective tax rate on businesses to 13.2% from the 15.6%. In quotes, many of the tax changes in the budget will move the needle on investment and productivity in Canada, especially in the manufacturing sector, said Trevor Tombe, T-O-M-B-E, an economics professor at the University of Calgary. Unfortunately, this is a temporary measure which limits its longer-term impact. Higher government spending doesn't come without risk, and some experts are worried about Canada's fiscal sustainability. With a higher deficit, the government will have to borrow more money, which could impact the interest Canadians pay on their debt, or raise more revenues through taxes. In quotes, the budget asks Canadians to wait for long-term payoffs while managing short-term sacrifices, Scotiabank economist Rebecca, and it's R-E-B-E-K-A-H, Young, Y-O-U-N-G, wrote in a note to clients. It may be the type of budget Canada needs, Young said, but the government still has to convince Canadians that it's the only one they want if they hope to catalyze investment. And this article included with files from Tonda McCharles and Alex Ballinghall, B-A-L-L-I-N-G-A-L-L, and Anna Pereira is a business reporter for The Star. You can reach her via email, A-N-P-E-R-E-I-R-A @thestar.ca. This next article is titled, What You Need to Know About This Year's Flu Shot and a New Mutated Virus. Despite a possible mismatch with this year's vaccine, experts say the shot will be beneficial. And there's a picture of a person receiving a shot, and it says, experts are seeing a new form of the H3N2 strain, a type of influenza A virus that tends to cause more severe infections. And the photograph or image is by Dreamstime. And this article is written by Sadine Mohsen, M-O-H-S-E-N, a staff reporter. Influenza cases are rising again in Canada, and the spread of an evolving strain may be to blame. Experts are seeing a new form of the H3N2 strain in Canada, a type of influenza A virus that they say tends to cause more severe infections. The new form arose during the Southern Hemisphere's influenza season this year, according to influenza data for the 2025 and 2026 flu season, published in the Journal of the Association of Medical Microbiology and Infectious Disease Canada. The Public Health Agency of Canada said that the new virus, in quotes, may not match the vaccine perfectly. In quotes, flu viruses, especially A, H3N2 can change quickly, so new strains sometimes appear after the vaccine is set, it said in a statement to The Star. The World Health Organization recommends which strains should get into the seasonal vaccine in February. In quotes, how much this matters depends on which strains dominate cases in Canada during flu season. Here's what you need to know about the season's virus and whether you should still get a flu shot. Question, should you be worried about influenza? Experts say influenza this season will carry varying degrees of risk depending upon who you are. In quotes, all you can do is the things that will protect yourself, said Dr. Allison McGeer, M-C-G-E-E-R, an infectious disease specialist at Sinai Health System. It is serious, and we do need to take it seriously. In Ontario, there have been 231 cases of influenza reported in the most recent week, according to Public Health Ontario data. Matthew Miller, director of the DeGroote Institute for Infectious Disease Research at McMaster University, said that the flu can generally be, in quotes, very dangerous and cause severe infection in people over 65 and those with underlying respiratory or cardiovascular disease. in quotes. There's also a significant number of people who thought they were young and healthy who end up severely ill in the hospital because of influenza. But there are preventative measures that can be taken, including masking, proper hand hygiene, and the flu shot. Question: is the current vaccine effective against this influenza strain? We won't know for a while how effective the vaccine is since it's early in flu season in North America, McGuire said. It will take weeks or months until the data has been collected. In quotes, the evidence we have so far suggests that at the moment, the mismatch is not going to be terrible, she said, noting that it's a statistical estimate. Vaccine effectiveness estimates are, in quotes, anticipated to be available in February or March 2026, according to Health Canada's website. In quotes, early data from Australia show the vaccine will still be effective, the Public Health Agency of Canada said. Australia started its flu season earlier and vaccinated people who were 53% less likely to need a doctor or hospital care. In Canada, H1N1 currently makes up 70% of influenza A cases. Question: should you still get the flu shot? Yes, it's recommended you still get your flu shot. In October, Miller published a research study which reviewed hundreds of cases, studies on cases of infection in children and adults after receiving a flu shot, and found that infections don't mean the vaccine isn't working. If the vaccine fails at preventing you from getting infected, it does at least prevent you from developing severe disease, he said. Another positive, Miller said, is a relief for the healthcare system. In quotes, the benefit of getting vaccinated is that we keep people out of the hospital. Question: where can you get the flu shot? Many major pharmacies, including Shoppers Drug Mart and Rexall, offer flu shots, as do primary care providers, community clinics, and travel health clinics. In Ontario, flu shots are free for those 6 months and up. There are also several flu clinics across Canada that offer flu shots, which are publicly available on Health Canada's website. And Sadine Motion is a staff reporter with the Toronto Star. You can email her at samohsen@thestar.ca. This next article is titled, "Walking on Yonge Street Shouldn't Feel Like a Contact Sport, So Why the Delays to Widen the Sidewalks?" Despite the city having taken steps in the form of Yonge Tomorrow, a project that hopes to increase and improve pedestrian safety, relief for that busy stretch of Yonge Street is still years away. And there's a picture of Yonge Street and people walking, and the caption states, "Pedestrians crowd the narrow sidewalks along Yonge Street between Dundas and Edward Streets during rush hour, weaving through limited space as traffic flows nearby." And this picture was taken, or photograph was taken, by Andres Valenzuela of the Toronto Star. This article is written by Liban Osman, and it's LibanOsman, staff reporter. When rush hour hits Yonge Street in the mid-afternoon, a flood of pedestrians can be seen weaving and bobbing while jostling for position on the narrow sidewalks. In quotes, "he just shoved me," one pedestrian can be overheard telling her friend. Quotes, "I just got elbowed by a stranger." It's a common experience of the many who dared to walk the strip among Yonge between Dundas and Elm Street, with it often feeling like there's more people on this than the sidewalk can even handle. Despite the city having taken steps in the form of Yonge Tomorrow, and it's Y-O-U-N-G, capital T, capital O, and then Morrow, M-O-R-R-O-W, a project that hopes to improve pedestrian safety, relief for this busy stretch of Yonge Street is still years away. Plans for wider sidewalks on Yonge remain in the early stages as questions swirl over what the city can do in the meantime for pedestrians. Construction isn't set to get started until the year 2030, and that's not guaranteed until the completion of the Ontario Line project on Queen Street. Reddit and social media posts continued to pop up discussing the narrow sidewalks, highlighting concerns such as pedestrians having to walk on the road to pass others due to uncomfortable crowding and construction limiting space. In quotes, originally, Young Tomorrow was supposed to be finished in the year 2025 and bring much needed wider sidewalks to the heart of downtown Toronto. But unfortunately, the pandemic and construction of the Ontario line may have caused significant delays, wrote City Councillor Chris Moyes, M-O-I-S-E, in a statement to The Star. From Young Tomorrow to the Next Decade. Back in 2021, Toronto City Council approved a redesign of downtown Yonge Street to cater to pedestrians. They coined the project Young Tomorrow with recommendations to reduce car lanes to one in each direction from Yonge Street, from College and Carleton Street all the way down to Queen Street, and expand sidewalks by 4 meters, as well as add bicycle lanes, plant street trees and parquets, benches, patios, and public art. According to the City of Toronto, it has recently wrapped up gathering information on how businesses will potentially be affected by this project, which remains in the design stage. Cheryl Diego, the Director of Public Realm Experience at the Downtown Yonge Business Improvement Area, and that's DYBIA, says the last time the group met with the city about the Yonge Tomorrow project was over the summer. In quotes, "It's a restart of the conversation," said Diego. "With all the things happening, the different priorities, I think it was quiet for a bit." Not so isolated to the Yonge Tomorrow project, Diego says, DYBIA has had other conversations about improving the sidewalks along Yonge. DYBIA has also been reaching out to the community and businesses that may be affected by the project and says the city needs to balance the competing needs between businesses and pedestrians. Maddie Simateki, S-I-E-M-I-A-T-Y-C-K-I, the director of the Infrastructure Institute at the University of Toronto, says despite there being high pedestrian traffic in the city, historically it's not always been a priority in how city streets are designed. In quotes, "These projects are controversial. There's thousands of people walking and their lives will be made much better by wider sidewalks. And it'll be safer for cyclists, but also in our cities, there's a lot of motorists and a lot of people who don't want these projects to go forward," said Simateki. "In Toronto, we fought over every lane and every sidewalk widening by one, and it's just made it challenging to do anything at scale. In November 2024, the Ontario government pushed a law restricting municipalities from removing vehicle traffic lanes for new bike lanes without provincial approval. If the city doesn't know, if Young Tomorrow is affected by Doug Ford's anti-bike lane bill, which appears to take away the city's ability to turn road lanes into anything else, including wider sidewalks," said Moyes. "What can be done in the interim? As the wait for wider sidewalks on Yonge Street continues, Simateki says Toronto should consider looking at Montreal and New York as examples of how they temporarily open up streets to pedestrians. Quotes, "New York City closed Times Square to cars and everyone thought it was going to be a complete traffic Armageddon, and it turned out actually that the traffic got rerouted and spread over different alternative routes, and at the same time, the neighborhood became so much more lively with people," he said. New Democrat MPP for Toronto Centre and former city councillor Kristen Wong Tang, and that's W-O-N-G-T-A-M, says nothing is stopping the city from deploying temporary measures that would widen sidewalks through a system called chicaning. It's spelled C-H-I-C-A-N-I-N-G, a series of curb extensions that alternate from one side of the street to the other, forming S-shaped curves to slow down traffic. The Young Tomorrow was initially pushed by Wong Tang, who had previously been advocating for making Yonge Street more accessible for pedestrians since 2011. Young Tomorrow conducted an environmental assessment between 2019 and 2020 between College to Queen Streets, but Wong Tame said they were also exposed to extend the study further along Yonge to north of Davenport Road and south to King Street. As far as Yonge Tame knows, the study hasn't happened. According to the city, it's found that there's a, in quotes, very high volume of pedestrian traffic between Dundas Street and Girard Street due to the density of the area and land use, with about 50 to 75% of the people using the street being pedestrians. The city didn't specify if it had any plans to implement interim measures until Yonge Tomorrow gets underway. In quotes, Yonge Street is so vibrant and so busy with people activity that literally people are falling off the sidewalk during peak hours. And now I would actually say it's actually unsafe, said Wong Tame. Quote, I'm an eternal optimist and the glass to me is always half full. And that's because I keep pouring in it, so I will never give up on Yonge Street. Laban Osman is a Toronto-based general assignment reporter for the Star City team. You can reach him via email at losman@thestar.ca. You are listening to a reading of selected articles and features from the Toronto Star on the Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. The next article is titled, The Toronto Zoo's New Komodo Dragons Need Names, So They're Holding a Vote. Here are the options. A male and female Komodo dragon are settling into the Australasian Pavilion at the zoo. And excuse me for my mispronunciation, probably, of that word. Maybe not. And there's a picture of one of them, and it says the Toronto Zoo is running a poll until November 20th to decide the names of its newest residents. And the picture is by the Toronto Zoo. And this article is written by Dania Yokab, and it's Dania Yokoob, staff reporter. The animal kingdom at the Toronto Zoo is welcoming two slithery, scaly residents, Komodo dragons, and now they're in need of a name. The reptiles, both 4 years old, are settling into the Australasian Pavilion, the zoo said in a release. To celebrate their arrival, the zoo is asking for help in naming both of the cold-blooded animals. For the female Komodo dragon, the zoo is asking people to choose between three names. The first, Cecha, it's C-E-C-A, means gold. The next name, Ora, O-R-A, is inspired by the Indonesian mythology, which suggests that Komodos and humans are twin siblings, according to the zoo. The last option is Raya, R-A-Y-A, and it is derived from Malay and means greatness. It is also widely used in Indonesia, the Komodo dragon's native lands. So, and they're asking you to vote at the torontozoo.com. For the male, and there's a caption, it's a Twitter account with pictures of both of the dragons. For the male, there's another set of names. Komo, short for Komodo, Wira, W-I-R-A, meaning hero, or Teman, T-E-M-A-N, which means friend. People can vote on the Toronto Zoo's website until November 20th to name the newest residents of their animal kingdom. Right now, visitors to the zoo can see the female dragon, while the Toronto Zoo said the male one would be viewable shortly. As the largest living lizard species on Earth, Komodo dragons are powerful, fascinating, and truly unforgettable to see in person, said the zoo. According to the zoo's release, Komodo dragons, which can grow up to 2.5 meters long and weigh up to 300 pounds, wow, are an endangered species facing habitat loss due to climate change and declining prey populations. Around 3,500 remain globally. And Dania Yokab is a staff reporter with the Star. You can reach her at her email, which is dyakoob@torstar.c. The next article is about the Toronto Leafs and its analysis. And it says, is Craig Berube, B-E-R-U-B-E, on the hot seat? The Lucy Maple Leafs might check in with these coaching options. Peter DeBoer, D-E-B-O-E-R, John Tortorella, T-O-R-T-O-R-E-L-L-A, Derek Lalonde, L-A-L-O-N-D-E. If GM Brad Treliving is looking for a new voice, the Leafs have alternatives. And there's a photograph with all of those coaches, those NHL coaches that I mentioned, could be candidates if the Leafs decide to make a change behind the bench. And this article is written by Kevin McGrand, M-C-G-R-A-N, a sports reporter. Coaches are hired to be fired, and Craig Berube may find himself on the hot seat with an underachieving Maple Leafs team on a 5-game losing streak. If things don't change soon, there will be more questions about the coach and the approach. They went from hard-nosed Mike Babcock to a player's coach in Sheldon Keefe, then back to the gruff and impatient Berube. Babcock and Berube have won Stanley Cups elsewhere. Keefe was a rookie NHL bench boss. The results on the ice have been much the same. Always in the playoffs, unable to go on a deep run. The Leafs may not be built to play Berube's close checking style. If general manager Brad Treliving is looking for a change, there is no shortage of candidate. Derek Lalonde, L-A-L-O-N-D-E. Nicknamed Newsy, the Leafs assistant coach is the most likely in-house candidate. Known as a strategist and innovator, Lalonde has had one head coaching gig with the Detroit Red Wings from 2022 to 2025. He's also coached in the minors, college, and junior hockey with success at every level and won a Stanley Cup as an assistant to Tampa Bay. He's considered a bit of a player's coach, but demanding. Peter Laviolette, and it's L-A-V-I-O-L-E-T-T-E. He has a Stanley Cup ring, Carolina Hurricanes in 2006, and the Leafs will value that. Laviolette pushes players hard, and his 10 years over a 23-year coaching career have usually been short as a result. He was fired by the New York Rangers in April after 2 seasons. His teams are typically in the playoffs, though, including a run to the Stanley Cup final with the Philadelphia Flyers in 2012. He is the winningest American coach in NHL history and 7th overall with 846 wins. John Tortorella, T-O-R-T-O-R-E-L-L-A. The Leafs might want to sell tickets to his medium scrums, sure to be entertaining. He's honest, doesn't suffer fools, and has been fined multiple times by the league. He works better with a mature team, a fit for the Leafs than a rebuilding one, like the one he had last year in Philadelphia. He's 9th in NHL coaching wins, 770, and has a Stanley Cup ring from his time with Tampa Bay, 2003 to 2004. He also coached the Columbus Blue Jackets to their first playoff series win, a 4-game sweep of the mighty Lightning in 2019. He won the Jack Adams Trophy as Coach of the Year with Columbus 2017 and Tampa Bay 2004. Peter DeBoer, D-E-B-O-E-R. He was ousted by Dallas in June after calling out the performance of the Stars goalie Jake Oettinger, O-E-T-T-I-N-G-E-R, in the playoffs, but is calm and cool behind the bench. DeBoer holds players accountable and is more offense-minded than most coaches. Though he hasn't won a cup, his teams generally go deep in the playoffs. He grew up in Dunville, Ontario, and was drafted by the Leafs as a center in 1988, but never played for them. Gerard Gallant, G-A-L-L-A-N-T, the Jack Adams winner, Vegas Golden Knights 2018, last worked with the Rangers in 2023. He's a player-friendly coach who took the expansion Knights to the 2018 Stanley Cup final, 1 season after the Florida Panthers fired him and left him off the team bus to make his own way back home from Carolina. As a player with the Red Wings, it was Gallant who accidentally stepped on Bohorg Salming, S-A-L-M-I-N-G, slashing the Leafs legend's face in a 1986 game. Some other Potential options are working elsewhere. Dominique Ducharme, D-U-C-H-A-R-M, Vegas assistant. His star fell too quickly in Montreal after he led the Canadiens past the Leafs in the 2021 playoffs and all the way to the Stanley Cup final. Dave Hakstol, H-A-K-S-T-O-L, Colorado Avalanche assistant, left an assistant role with the Leafs to run the expansion Seattle Kraken, K-R-A-K-E-N. He still knows the Leafs very well. Jay Woodcroft, W-O-O-D-C-R-O-F-T, Anaheim Ducks assistant, rose from video coach in Detroit to become head coach of Edmonton Oilers before his current gig. Todd Reirden, R-E-I-R-D-E-N, Panthers assistant, led the Washington Capitals to two first-place finishes but was fired for lack of success in the playoffs. Dale Hunter, London Knights head coach, OHL, famously benched Alex Ovechkin, O-V-E-C-H-K-I-N, in the 2012 playoffs in his only NHL coaching stint. His Capitals won that Game 4 against the Boston Bruins and went on to win the first round series to 7. Kevin McGran is a Stars reporter based in Toronto. This next article is titled, While There's Hope for America and the World, if Marjorie Taylor Greene is really sorry. During a Sunday interview with Greene, the Republican apologized for taking part in, quotes, toxic politics. And there's a picture of Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's a representative of South Carolina, chair of the Subcommittee on Delivering on Government Efficiency, DOGE, D-O-G-E, listens during an oversight and government reform hearing on Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. on February 12, 2025. This article is written by Alan Woods, staff reporter. It is hazardous to pin hopes on someone who solicits votes for a living, but the temptation is great when the politician in question is Marjorie Taylor Greene, among the most strident and unyielding of the Make America Great Again Republicans. It has taken some serious social media shade from U.S. President Donald Trump for the Georgia member of the House of Representatives to see the light. And what's clear, according to a Sunday interview Greene gave to Gasp CNN, is that a poster girl for corrosive American political culture has been spreading like a contagion around the world is sorry. In quotes, I have something in my heart that I think is incredibly important for our country, and that is to end the toxic fighting in politics, she said, noting that it has divided the country, friends, families, neighbors, and was not solving America's many problems. Quotes, I would like to say humbly, I'm sorry for taking part in the toxic politics. It's something I thought a lot about, especially since Charlie Kirk was assassinated. We might view the remarkable interview as proof that Greene is already on her own personal road to Damascus, even if she denounced Trump's White House welcome to Syrian President Ahmed al-Shahar, and it's A-L-S-H-A-R-A-A, just last week, owning to Shahar's past involvement with al-Qaeda. She hasn't changed her core isolationist inclinations. She suggested in the interview that Air Force One, the presidential plane, should be, in quotes, parked, and that Trump should ignore the world and commit to, quotes, nothing but a constant focus on a domestic agenda that helps the American people once and for all. As about faces go, we are far from the Russian President Vladimir Putin sending regrets and compensation to the Ukrainian people for years of war. Something along the lines, rather, of George W. Bush leaving behind the catastrophic war on terror to take up painting and becoming besties with Michelle Obama. Perhaps there's enough to imagine a John Lennon-like future in which Conservative Party leader Pierre Poilievre, P-O-I-L-I-E-V-R-E, sends his best wishes to Katy Perry and Justin Trudeau, his former political foil. Or maybe that Canadian fantasy is more far-fetched than Green's Kumbaya conversion. A fierce defender of gun rights in the Second Amendment, she posted a video on her ex account just 2 months ago that showed her on the back of a truck next to a U.S. flag firing rounds from an assault rifle up for auction, part of the political fundraiser with the charming tagline, in quotes, "Save America, Stop Communism." It's only fair under those circumstances to question whether she is shooting blanks now in saying she is committed, and I've been working on this a lot lately, to put down the knives in politics. End quote. I really just want to see people be kind to one another, she told CNN. End quote. As Americans, no matter what side of the aisle we're on, we have far more in common than we have differences. That line will get a chuckle out of the U.S. president like Trump, for whom divide and conquer is the marching order kicking off every working day. But it echoes the words of an earlier commander-in-chief who addressed Canadian parliamentarians with the always wise words, quote, "What unites us is far greater than what divides us." That speaker was John F. Kennedy. Nearly 65 years after his 1961 Ottawa speech, Green's change of heart would have Kennedy turning in his grave, the one he was sent to with an assassin's bullet. If it is true that Green is committed to turning over a new political leaf in line with the Christian values she preaches, the conversion would be of the deathbed variety, and she's shown some consistency here. Green's last of many bang bang gun videos was posted to her ex account the morning that conservative activist Charlie Kirk was shot and killed while speaking at a university campus in Utah on September 10th. Her first reaction to Kirk's killing was of a kind with the extreme right wing of her party. In quotes, "I'm praying that he survives, and I'm praying that this country rises up and ends this." This, meaning the left-wing extremism that Trump likened to a political poison threatening the country. But Green has now gotten a taste of her own tough-to-swallow mega medicine, this after challenging Trump's reluctance to release Justice Department files related to the deceased sex trafficker, Jeffrey Epstein. Epstein was a friend and confidant to the world's wealthy and well-connected, including to Trump, who has denied any knowledge or involvement in Epstein's sex crimes, despite the release of records last week and was the president it's mentioned by name. One email claimed that Trump, quote, spent hours in the company of one of Epstein's victims. In a 2018 text message discussing critics of Trump, then in his first presidential term, Epstein claimed, in quotes, "I am the one able to take him down." That has raised the political temperature in Washington, as well as the stakes, and Green has been singled out for Trump's wrath. He's dubbed her, quotes, "wacky a rhino," R-I-N-O, which means Republican in name only, accused her of having, quotes, turned left, of being, in quotes, "just another fake politician." Following her CNN interview, Trump accused her on his social media account of, in quotes, "working overtime to try and portray herself as a victim when, in actuality, she is the cause of all her own problems." In quotes, "The fact is, nobody cares about this traitor to our country," he wrote. That charge, Green said, is the most, quote, "hurtful and the most reckless." Quote, "Those are the type of words used that can radicalize people against me and put my life in danger. It's an on-the-bullseye realization from a politician in the crosshairs, looking equal parts humbled and terrified. Whether it's the fear of God that's gotten into Green or simply the fear of Trump, what matters is the result, that she has been scared straight and adopted the rarest things in modern political life, a conciliatory tone. Let's hope that it lasts longer than the next news cycle. Alan Woods is a Paris-based staff reporter for The Star. The next article is titled Premiers Say They Had Positive Meeting with PM, Hint That Tariff Relief Is Coming. And this article says, Ottawa, New Brunswick Premier Susan Holt said premiers had a, quote, productive meeting with Prime Minister Mark Carney today, mainly to discuss the federal budget and progress on tariff talks with the United States. And there's a picture with Mark Carney and Susan Holt, and the caption reads, Prime Minister Mark Carney left, meets with New Brunswick Premier Susan Holt in her office in Fredericton, NB, on Monday, November 10th. And the picture's by the Canadian Press. It's by Stephen McGillivray, and it's McGillivray. And this article is by Catherine Morrison of the Canadian Press. Ottawa, New Brunswick Premier Susan Holt said premiers had a productive meeting with Prime Minister Mark Carney today, mainly to discuss the federal budget and progress on tariff talks with the United States. Noting the impact of tariffs on New Brunswick, Holt says that the group spoke about softwood lumber, and Carey indicated a, in quotes, significant new package is coming from the federal government. Ontario Premier Doug Ford is also hinting that tariff relief is coming, suggesting after the meeting that an announcement on steel and softwood lumber will be coming in the next week or so. The virtual meeting this morning was the first since U.S. President Donald Trump halted trade talks between the two countries over an anti-tariff ad Ford's government ran in the U.S. markets. Holt says Carney and the premiers also discussed other trade relationships at the meeting. She says Carney committed to engaging with the premiers through regular meetings in the new year. This report by the Canadian Press was first published November 17th, 2025. This next article is in the Life section, and the article is titled, Can You Throw Dog Doo-Doo in Someone Else's Garbage Bin? The Debate Over the Politics of Poop. And City Bylaws, Vigilante Justice. It's an old age debate that gets neighbors up in arms. And there's a picture of dogs and one is pooing, and it says, how and where dog owners dispose of poo bags has some Torontonians holding their noses. And this photo is by Nick LaChance of the Toronto Star. It's a file photo. And this article is written by Mark Coley, C-O-L-L-E-Y, a staff reporter. Jennifer Donaldson thought nothing of throwing her dog poop bag in a neighbor's trash bin until a car nearly ran her over. She had just tossed the bag when a driver careened towards her and jumped the curb, window down and screaming, in quotes, get the poo out of my bin, the woman yelled, in quotes, don't ever do that again. That was, Donaldson said, the first, last, and only time I ever threw a bag into someone's bin. And for Donaldson, who has owned and run the Toronto Dog Walking Service Citizen Canine since 2008, it was an introduction into this lively debate around other people's trash. It is more than simply a legalistic question. It is a moralistic and ethical one, one that gets neighborhood Facebook groups up in arms and non-dog owners holding their noses. But no one, it seems, is holding their tongues. The Star asked the question in a Beaches neighborhood group. Nearly 50 people commented in less than 24 hours. And quote, this should have a trigger warning, one resident joked. The city says it's simple, don't do it. Annette Sinoki, S-N-Y-O-W-E-I-E-C, Toronto's Director of Collections and Litter Operations, understands the temptation. It might seem better than littering, or worse yet, leaving the remnants of your dog's last bowl of kibble on the lawn three doors down. But her advice is clear. Don't do it. In fact, throwing private trash in someone else's bin without their consent is against city bylaws. That includes dog waste. Not that it's likely to result in the maximum $10,000 first conviction fine. In quotes, enforcement of these bylaws are rarely required, the city said in an email, and only on a complaint-based response. For Sinokiak, it's also a matter of getting the value you deserve from municipal taxes. end quotes. You have a certain size garbage bin and you pay for that service, end quotes, right? She said, technically, you're kind of using that other person's capacity. Some owners poo-poo the bylaws. But the world is not a perfect place, and many of Toronto's bylaws go unheeded. Throwing a frisbee is outlawed in some city parks, but Councilman Josh Matlow, M-E-T-L-O-W, does it anyways. He previously admitted to the Star, in quotes, guilty as charged, he said. Snowball fights require permits, and that's never stopped Erica Nicole, N-I-K-O-L-A-I, executive director of Park People Advocacy Group. And keep your eyes peeled out for those hooligans handing out helium balloons in Toronto's public squares, because there's a bylaw against that too. And there's a picture of somebody walking, there's three dogs, and it says disposing of trash in someone else's bin without their permission is against Toronto's bylaws, although it's rarely enforced. And this photo is by Steve Russell, Toronto Star. It's a file photo. Likewise, the stern warning of section 548-4B2 of Toronto's municipal code has done little to prevent four-year-old Max's feces from ending up in your green bin, which Sinokic says is where dog poo bags belong. Yes, even plastic ones, or worse yet, your trash. I had a leaf bag on the sidewalk, and a dog owner left a poop bag on top. One Facebook user responded to the Star. By the end of the day, there were eight more. It drives me crazy. Some say trash is trash, but others complain of the smell in the summer heat and the mess of split bag at the bottom of the bin. Jen Reeder, R-E-E-D-E-R, a freelance journalist and former president of the Dog Writers Association of America, found this out when she wrote a pet advice column a few years ago on this very subject. The politics of poop are intense, said Reeder, who is based in Denver, Colorado, and owns a Yorkshire Terrier mix named Tux. They think it's gross and they think it's rude, especially people who don't have pets. The exceptions to the rule. Reeder now throws her poop bags in public bins or simply carries them home. It's a, quote, common courtesy, she said, to make neighbors happy. For some, there are times when exceptions can be made. The rules for those occasions, according to Nicola Smith, the owner of Toronto dog walking service We Wag Toronto, go something like this. It should be garbage day, so the bag won't fester for long. The garbage should already be out at the curb, so you aren't stepping on someone's property. And the bin should still be full, ideally only minutes or hours away from being picked up, so there's no chance the bag will get stuck at the bottom. And then, only then, will Smith toss a poop bag on top. I generally don't like to have people mad at me, she chuckled. Others are resolute. Your trash belongs in your bin and no one else's. Nearly getting hit by a car was enough to convince Donaldson of that. I put it in my car, then find a city bin, Donaldson said, before I'll do it again. Mark Coley is a Toronto-based general assignment reporter for The Star. You can reach him via email mcoley@thestar.ca. You have been listening to a reading of selected articles and features from the November 17th, 2025 issue of the Toronto Star. Your reader has been Judy, and it's been an honor and pleasure to read for you. Thank you so much for listening, and take great care of yourselves, and have an amazing day.